All right, wow. So we're back for season three of The Office Hour, a number of months after the end of season two of The Office Hour. And we're going to talk about a really interesting thing today, but before we do, I want to introduce my two hosts, guests. I'm not guest hosts.
Friends.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
newfound interlocutors, whichever you prefer.
Right, so if you don't mind introducing yourself.
Jonathan Shelley, first year Brit, new Brit, first podcast, excited to be here. I study friendship in early modern prose, poetry, and drama.
Yeah. Hi, and I'm Corey Gergen. I'm also a first year Brit, and my research is on the prehistory of addiction in the 18th century.
And we're conference attendees.
And we have both attended conferences.
This is what I wanted to talk about today. Specifically, I read a piece in The Atlantic this morning about how doing graduate education has incredibly adverse health effects, that it's really bad for you. Apparently, very high thoughts of suicide and depression and this sort of stuff. And it strikes me that part of this is obviously the labor market, the fact that 70 to 80% of classes now are taught by adjunct labor. A lot of labor is contingent in academia. And however, putting that slightly to the side or maybe in a kind of horrifying backdrop, the thing I'm interested in talking about today is conferences, which might seem super esoteric, but part of why I'm interested in it is it strikes me that part of the sort of decline in graduate student health and indeed probably mental health in broader academic spaces is that a lot of these structures that inform how academics live their lives or what they do or how they accomplish things within their fields seem like they no longer are particularly nurturing. And there's been a number of different treatments, including a piece that you sent me from the New York Times, the Conference Manifesto a couple years ago, that make conferences seem like a dangerous and outdated and potentially even malignant part of this structure. So what I'd like to put to both of you today as conference attendees and connoisseurs of addiction and friendship, which also seem like germane topics.
Not unrelated to the conference.
Yeah. Are these things worthwhile anymore? They seem like horrible gatekeeping functions to people who live below the poverty line but need to spend $1,000 to fly out somewhere to read a piece of paper to an empty room.
It does certainly seem like conferences kind of perpetuate themselves on their own momentum. That is to say, they exist as something that we go to because we know they exist, and there's sort of a need to keep up appearances. I mean, just to sort of to read something specific, Toby, from this article you mentioned by Christy Wampel, the Conference Manifesto, which was from a few years ago in the New York Times. She writes this. This is her. Academic conferences are a habit from the past, embraced by the administrativeversity as a way to showcase knowledge and to increase productivity in the form of published conference proceedings. And then she goes on to say that we believe it is time to ask ourselves, what is the purpose of the conference? What has caused us to organize these things year after year without questioning their basis? Is there another way to reformat the conference or do away with it altogether, replacing it with something more intellectually, professionally, and socially satisfying for everyone? Before getting to that second point, though, I think she diagnoses a lot in those first two questions, or, you know, those questions could really be comments in the sense that the conference has lost a purpose precisely because I don't think it really questions its basis. I think there are large conferences that sort of simply exist year after year because it's fashionable for them to exist year after year.
Yeah, that piece that you're describing is almost the second wave of the criticisms of the conference, right? This is the from tenured or tenure track faculty criticism, which is these things are boring. And the first wave is sort of, Toby, what you were saying earlier about the cost of attending, right? The threshold for attending for graduate students, for adjunct faculty. And I think both of these criticisms are true, but they also produce one another. So because the job market is what it is, people are going to conferences earlier, they're going to conferences more, and we were talking earlier about whether it matters in our on our CVs, but it seems to matter, right? We think it matters, right? So we're going more and more, and these conferences almost have a moral imperative to let us all in and give our talks so that we can have our CV lines, and the conferences get bigger and bigger, and it's harder to find the sort of through lines and sort of intellectual, maintain intellectual connections across, you know, a conference where there's 8 to 10 to 12 concurrent panels at any given moment, right? So they're becoming more boring because more of us are spending our own money to go to them because we feel we have to, right?
And this is the question, is we feel we have to, but then it is, I think you're touching on the second point, which is, I think there is real questions about whether these are valuable anymore, both in the sense of something that these articles point out, which is that they don't necessarily have a basis, or they aren't necessarily asking interesting questions. But similarly, I wonder too now if a line on the CV of having gone to a conference means as much as it used to. Just to emphasize something else from, and I'll read it again. You know, they Christy Wampole talks about how the conference exists to showcase knowledge and to increase productivity in the form of published conference proceedings. Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure that that latter part happens anymore, because I've been to many conferences, and I admit I have not published any of that stuff. And so a lot of this material just goes into even a higher ether that never gets accessed or never really produces anything.
Yeah, and for me, like a number of my conferences experiences as well, and even at relatively large conferences that are fairly well known, is the experience of reading to an almost entirely empty room or a room with like one person from my dissertation panel and like two friends who I read the paper to like yesterday sort of thing. What strikes me as part of the crazy sort of paranoia of academia more broadly is that these things mattering sort of depends on people like us thinking these things matter, right? Like, assuming that, like, one of the three of us one of the three of us gets a job, then, like, suddenly we become the gatekeeping function of the very function that we're critiquing at the moment, which seems to be, like, the weird kind of Ouroboros of academia in general, is that, like, you become Stanley Fish, you know, in your future life.
Yes.
So is that the worst of it? Like, is the worst of it that this is useless, or is the worst of it worse than useless? Because this is my other secret critique, is that, like, let's say conferences were small, well attended, and full of people who had very field specific knowledge to you, wouldn't you then have the problem of the people who could afford the conference becoming the sort of in-crowd, you know, sort of knowledge culture, and those who aren't there for, you know, geospatial reasons or whatever, become just the sort of the academic proletariat?
I agree with that. I mean, to the extent that there is the irony in that, I think a lot of times people propose the solution to this would be smaller conferences, say, to go to the example that you cited, Toby, of the virtually empty room that you're reading a paper to, and that somehow smaller conferences are sometimes touted as a solution to this problem because everyone attends each other's paper. But then you do run into the problem that you're possibly working with a much more myopic than audience that isn't necessarily much help at all. I suppose in the most positive senses, though, I mean, in the best case scenario, numbers might not matter. I mean, one single helpful collaborator that you can find at a conference may actually be very worthwhile. And I think, you know, anecdotally or factually, I think people do talk about sort of getting unofficial kind of mentors in the form of conferences and meeting people. I can certainly identify specific people that I've met at conferences in these capacities, but they do seem like a very expensive way to go about doing this.
Yeah, and because they're so expensive, they have to. I'll tell an anecdote first and then say why it matters, but I was recently at a conference that was happening at the same time as one of those nightmare nor'easters, and the entire Northeast was not at the, couldn't make it to the conference. They were just all stranded in airports. And the conference, it was against the conference rules for anyone to Skype in because of the deals they made with the hotel, or because they needed to make sure they had the conference costs or whatever it was. So there were all of these panels. I was on a round table with supposedly six speakers. Only two of us spoke. And we spoke for 5 minutes and then had an hour of awkward conversation. And like those kinds of roundtables are typically, like, to preview my mutant hybrid version of the conference, those type of roundtables are usually what I find productive, right? A sort of shorter talking time, more conversation time. But when you craft a roundtable with six people and only two of them can speak because the other four aren't allowed to Skype in, you lose that functionality too.
I'll add, in terms of like sort of mounting kinds of both anecdotes but also mutant anecdotes, I'll freely admit that probably the best relationships that I've managed to cultivate from conferences have not come from the academic settings. Yeah. I think one came from a friend who came up and said, "You all look like grad students, so I'm going to talk to you." And he was a grad student at the time. Like another person too that I've since been on panels with, I became friends with because we were both at the dance for the conference. The Shakespeare Association of America conference always has a dance at the end, which is neat. So, but I mean, I almost feel worse because in that sense, I'm even, I'm playing to the privilege of having had the disposable income to attend this very social function rather than like, that I got to network through the most social of interactions rather than any kind of rigorous intellectual workshopping or roundtable.
I think that's right. A lot of the best contacts I've made at conferences come in those sort of social spaces. But I also always feel like those social spaces are the most like fraught by the power differentials in those conferences, right? Because like I'm counting my drinks at the pay bar both because the drinks at the pay bar are very expensive and because I don't know who's going to overhear me. Whereas the tenured people are not counting their drinks, right? And so there's always this kind of strange, even when I find a group of graduate students or, you know, now early PhD people to sort of have a social network group with, like, the room is still shaped by the power differentials, I feel like, and in strange ways.
Yeah, yeah. You know, recently my wife's mother and sister were visiting for the Thanksgiving holiday, and after Thanksgiving ended, they put up Christmas ornaments, like on the front of the lights
and
stuff.
Immediately,
yeah. And I was like, oh, that's fun. Like, I have children, and they were really excited about it. And then I looked around, and like everybody in the whole neighborhood had them up except for one house. And it was like, oh, you know, they're probably getting divorced or something. You know? but I remember this feeling at a conference where it was like all the grad students were hanging out and a tenured professor came over to hang out. And everyone was like, what's wrong with that guy?
Right.
Right? Where you're like, that doesn't seem like that should be the case. Like you're some kind of pariah if you try to cross those power lines.
Yeah. No, there's another conference that I go to regularly, they usually have a graduate student drink night. They go out to a bar away from the conference, and a recently graduated PhD who had just gotten a job, like, very sheepishly was, like, polling the group that was going to ask if they would be welcomed. And, of course, they were, but it was this, and, like, now I'm probably in that same boat. Like, these people are my friends, and
this is a good question.
Am I allowed to go with them?
This is a good question about what are we? I mean, we exist in a bit of a liminal state as Britain Fellows in which we are, you know, we're not ABD anymore and we have positions that are not tenure track or things like that, but are semi-permanent in a way that, I don't know if I don't know if I would be accepted by the cool grad students now.
But would you be accepted by the tenured people either?
I doubt it.
You know?
Yeah.
What kind of freaks are we? Which brings me to, I guess my next question is there another iteration of this? Like, is it sort of just be like we all take like some kind of culinary class together? Or like, is there another version of kind of group participation or, you know, kind of culture building that doesn't look like this? Does it? And maybe my last bit of that is, like, how much of it requires the sort of central conference premise of taking your bodies somewhere and paying too much for a hotel or the right amount for not a good hotel?
So it's hard to say because I do want to at least give conferences their due and that I've had very positive conference experiences. And by positive, I don't just mean that there was sort of a small moment within a conference that was rewarding, but that an entirety of a conference has been very monumental. And I hesitate to say this, it's almost going to sound sort of saccharine or something, but almost life-changing. So, I mean, I'll admit that, like...
Oh, wow, all right.
I mean, I'll admit that the best conference I've ever been to was the Asian Shakespeare Association conference this past summer, which was in Manila, Philippines. So it's already... That already, you could say, is a problem in that there was a huge barrier to entry and that you had to somehow secure the funds, either just paying out of pocket or having a very generous institution or some kind of grant money that could get you to Manila. And I admit that I both had a good amount of funding at the time, but also did pay some out of pocket to go. But it was the most rewarding conference I had ever been to. There certainly were panels, but they were fundamentally different than any panels I heard in the U.S., primarily because a majority of the attendees were not from the U.S. The majority of attendees were from Asia. A lot of attendees were from Britain. So that, and as cliche as this is too, it really was that variety of perspectives that made it interesting. I mean, hearing someone talk about the translation of Shakespeare into Tagalog and the history of that is incredibly fascinating. And I just don't think you would ever get that in the physical space of the United States. I mean, to put it another way, I don't know that the funds exist to bring someone, say, from the Philippines to the U.S. to do that. The other thing I'll say about that conference that made it incredibly effective was that there was so much, I would say, non-conference things that happened, which is to say that a majority of the conference was built around performances of Shakespeare. So every night of the conference had some sort of performance of Shakespeare. One was a student performance, another was a video performance from Japan. And I have to say that I saw the greatest production of Richard III I have ever seen, and probably the greatest production of a Shakespeare play I will ever see, on the third night, in which it was Richard III, but it was Richard III played as the current president of the Philippines, Duterte.
Oh, wow. And police didn't, like, storm the building or anything?
You know, they didn't, but it's interesting you say that, because it was the first time in which I was in a theater space and actually felt like, wow, if the wrong people saw this, these people in here would get in a lot of trouble. And they dramatized, extrajudicial killings of so-called pushers and drug dealers that the president there has been accused of ordering. And they likened it to sort of Richard III's vigilante sort of killing of his opponents and everything. But it was amazingly effective. You had to be there in that space. You had to be there in that geography. You had to be around those people. And I would say it was precisely that this conference was doing all these other things than just the panels, just the roundtables, just the seminars that made it a good conference.
Wow, that does sound life-changing.
Yeah, and I mean, just to sort of second that, yeah, I think the way to make a conference valuable is to think specifically about what is the value of having all of these people in the same space. And Toby, to go back to the way you framed this, if anybody out there is planning an 18th century Romanticism conference and you have an 18th century culinary demonstration, I will come and pay whatever price to go see that and participate in that. Performance, I've been to conferences with sort of period musical performances from the music department that have been, you know, maybe not life-changing, but fascinating and really interesting and sort of a break from the standard keynote panel, keynote pattern. ASEX, which is the National 18th Century Conference, does this very extensive, Jason Farr actually organizes it, but it's called The Doctor Is In, and there's just one of the rooms is desks with tenured faculty who sort of take shifts, and early career doctorates, graduate students can come in and just ask questions about the profession, about their job. They can bring in their materials and get feedback, which is a really useful sort of way to sort of break down those power differences or use the power differentials to the benefit of those sort of contingent people. But to sort of to go to the question of borders and sort of the cost of bringing people to the United States, it's also increasingly difficult for people to come to the United States to do this kind of work. And so, you know, I wonder, certain people to come to the United States. And so I wonder if some of the stuff that we're doing with traditional conferences, we could do more equitably and do some of that kind of cross-cultural work if we thought more about ways to do these conferences digitally, right? Mm-hmm. And sort of think of ways to organize them digitally that could give us the CV lines that maybe don't matter individually, but if they're not there, it matters, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, a CV with a conference presentation maybe doesn't matter, but a CV without any conference presentations definitely matters.
Yeah, no, that's good. But I guess it still seems like there's this sort of problem, though, of like Jonathan's story requires space and like a particular national context and like bodies in a room. Even as I think you're exactly right, that it strikes me in the world that we live in and that there's almost no believable version of future conferences that are not meaningfully digitized or sort of networked. I know I've seen some talk about conferences becoming things that happen simultaneously in multiple places so that like various regionalisms are still able to participate in the sort of discourse. But even then, I mean, it seems like, right, like wouldn't the Northeastern region and like, you know, like, like education and knowledge isn't distributed equitably. So it seems like you always run into that over and over again, which may not be a new thing. Now that I'm thinking about it, like this might be like if we went back and looked at Virginia Woolf, she'd be like, bruh, you know, it's right here in this little pamphlet I wrote about rooms and stuff.
right.
Brilliant. Well, this was great. I think I think we solved it. I think
clearly.
Yeah, definitely.
The stadiums of people listening, rapt attention to our conference verdicts, will tune in the future. Thank you so much. This was brilliant. I look forward to doing more of these.
Thank you, Terry. Thanks for having us.